Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 146. I am your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
What a horrible night to have a curse.
Oh, I don't know about that. Seems like a pretty good night to have a curse, and a good night to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. There was just a Smash Direct a few hours ago as we record this, so that's going to be a big part of this week's episode. But there's also other news to talk about, some new releases to discuss, and then our big topic for the week, which is going to be what we'd like to see out of a Switch redesign.
Ooh.
However, as I said, we just had a Super Smash Bros. Direct, and there was some big news out of that, so that's how we're going to kick off this episode of the show. There were a few huge reveals on that broadcast, including some new fighters, Simon Belmont and King K. Rool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even entirely sure which one I am more excited about. Pete, what about you?
Chris, hands down, Simon Belmont. Come on.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, certainly a good choice. You really can't go wrong either way. I mean, Simon is a very exciting inclusion, and one that I really didn't expect, given the way that Konami has handled the Castlevania brand and the character, and how it seems like they just totally don't give a poop about anything Castlevania-related anymore.
Yeah.
But it seems that Nintendo does, and Sakurai does, and they are going nuts with the Castlevania inclusions in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Yeah. They are going all out.
Apparently their audio team also loves Castlevania.
Yes, yes indeed. So, you know, not only is Simon in there and he's got his traditional vampire killer whip and he is whipping the crap out of opponents and bad guys, but he's also got his axe and his holy water and the boomerang cross. And he's got, a crazy-looking final smash called the Grand Cross. He's even got his whip waggle in there.
Even that.
Yeah. And on top of that, I guess his stage has, like, many of the major enemies from throughout the Castlevania series.
Yeah.
Frankenstein's monster and Medusa and Death and Carmella and the werewolf and, of course, even Dracula himself. And then, as you were alluding to, 34 stinking music tracks from throughout the Castlevania series. I mean, I'd be happy with like 6 or something. I love the Castlevania music. I always come back to like, 6 main themes are my favorites, but 34? I mean, that's just awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable, and it just feels like a love letter to Castlevania in general.
It does. It does indeed. And then there's Alucard as an assist trophy, and Richter as an alternate version of Simon as an Echo Fighter.
Yeah.
So they are just going through the roof with Castlevania love. I mean, Konami doesn't care, but Nintendo cares, and Netflix cares, and that's amazing.
Yeah, I will say that the model looked a tiny bit like He-Man, so I'm not really sure how I feel about that.
Well, I mean, Classic Simon did kind of look like He-Man. He was, very much a barbarian, and they went back to his old school look, none of the ridiculous, crazy Simon outfits from Castlevania Judgment or anything like that.
Right.
I am pretty darn happy with how he appears in the game. I really like how Richter looks as well. And Alucard, for that matter. I mean, everything looks fantastic. As a longtime Castlevania fan, it just blew me away how much great stuff they're doing here. And as I say this all out loud, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, probably I'm more excited about Simon's inclusion, too.
And how about the way they introduced him as well?
They murdered Luigi.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, just the whole reveal was pretty cool to see. I mean, like, honestly, wouldn't mind seeing more cutscenes in that world.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, you're right. They were showing that cutscene and showing Luigi being chased by the monsters. And then you see the spiked ball on the end of the chain. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, who's a character with a spiked ball at the end of a chain? Who has a morning star? And then it dawns on me, a second before the reveal, I'm like, oh my God, it's Simon Belmont. It's Castlevania.
Yeah.
And, it sort of blew my mind for a second there. Like I said, I just did not think it would happen based on Konami's recent track record.
Now, I got to say, that was a pretty cool reveal, but it probably wasn't as cool as the other reveal.
You mean the way that they teased with King Dedede before giving us King K. Rool?
I mean, they absolutely trolled us with King Dedede.
kind of. I mean, I knew as soon as I saw it, they were not going to just waste the resources doing that. So, you know, as soon as they started it, I was like, okay, this is totally going to be King K. Rool. But it was kind of a cool thing to do.
I mean, it was seriously maybe one of the most Sakurai things I think I've seen in a year full of Sakurai things.
Yeah, yeah, very, very true. And that's even more true when you consider that, you know, King DDD is a Sakurai creation.
That's right. And I love how he kind of like hopped around, like kind of laughing and crying all over the place, like anime yes. style.
But then he was also murdered, so R.I.P. King DDD.
That's right. King DDD and Luigi taken out in this Nintendo Direct.
Yep, and that's on top of Mega Man and Mario being slain back at E3.
That's right. You have a tweet about that.
But yeah, King K. Rool is in there too. He's looking pretty awesome. He can throw his crown and he can shoot his blunderbuss, and then he can deflect attacks with his belly, apparently. He's got lots of belly-based attacks. And they didn't confirm that was his final smash, but it looks like his final smash where he fires this gigantic, massive, huge laser cannon from his base, which is pretty darn impressive looking.
Yeah, pretty cool. It's almost like the Death Star of Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that is very true. So, yeah, King K. Rool, a character that has been requested by a lot of fans. It's not one that I was really looking forward to personally. You know, if I wanted a reptilian character with a crown, I would have gone with Wart myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, King K. Rool is obviously a major Nintendo villain that was, you know, really popular amongst a certain crowd. You know, he was huge back in the 90s, so it is pretty neat. I mean, I'm not going to really complain about any character that gets included. It's only like, oh, I wish this character were included instead or something. So it's great to see him in there.
Sure, yeah, and absolutely out of left field. I mean, I guess I really never thought that he would truly make it into Smash Brothers, just because, you know, he was not really a very well-explored character, and I can't even imagine what he would look like animated running. But, you know, sure enough, there he is in the game, and it looks good, mm-hmm. and they seem to have treated the source material very well.
Yeah, yeah, and I tend to kind of agree that I thought it was a little bit of a long shot since it was a Rare-created character.
Right.
And Nintendo's sort of shied away from those characters. He hasn't been featured in the Donkey Kong Country revival from recent years. So, you know, I was kind of questioning whether that could ever happen. But, you know, it did happen, and it is great. And, you know, even though, like I said, I was a little reticent at first, I love the fact that he's in there and very happy for everyone who was waiting for him to show up.
Yeah, I'm also thinking that now that he's in there, I feel like that like sort of opens the floodgates to a couple more things that, you know, that really have been fan requests that haven't been answered. So, I don't know. Pro wrestling, maybe? Toad, maybe?
Is anyone really requesting characters from pro wrestling aside from you and me? I don't know.
I mean, I you gotta think so. You gotta think Sakurai's heard people asking for Amazon or Starman or something.
Yeah, the one I'm surprised still hasn't been announced yet as a character from ARMS. That seems like, you know, such an obvious one. But
yeah, I mean,
you know, if I could choose between an ARMS character and a Castlevania character, you know which one I'm going with. So
every day of the week.
I'm so happy that he is dipping into that old school nostalgia, you know, retro gamer stuff, instead of just being like, oh yeah, here's the cool new thing from Nintendo. Let's promote our most recent brands, instead of going for something that, you know, if you had made a Nintendo All-Stars game back in the 80s or 90s, obviously Simon would have been in there. But now it's like, would it happen? Yes, yes, it still can.
I mean, we might go into this a bit more, but it really is becoming almost laughable at how much of like a living archive of Nintendo and, you know, old school video game nostalgia Smash Brothers is.
Well, I mean, it always has been, you know, at least ever since Melee, and that's one of the things I love about it. But yes, the fact they just keep bringing in more old school franchises like this, you know, makes it even more so.
Well,
yeah.
Right, and then as you saw, they including all the levels, even the old N64 ones, they're basically keeping them the same. Like, so the graphics aren't really that much better, and it almost like just kind of harkens to that era. There's like what, over 800 music tracks in the game.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we should get into the other stuff they talked about in this direct rather than just those two or three major characters. The other two characters they revealed as playable are just Echo Fighters. So we've got Crom, who is an Echo Fighter of Roy. And, you know, Crom was a highly requested character, so it's cool to see him get in there.
Yeah, definitely.
And then there is Dark Samus, who is an Echo Fighter based on regular Samus. I really couldn't care less about that one because, you know, we already kind of had Dark Samus just sort of as an alternate outfit of Samus.
This one has different moves, bro. Not different moves, but they, you know, different nuances, I guess, is the way to say it.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. It's not even going to have a really different move set. I mean, there are changes to things. You know, maybe if I learned they're really extensive or something. But it's not a character that, you know, really has any personality or that I care about. So it's like, okay, well, all right, that's fine. As long as it's not taking up some other character's slot, that's cool. But it's not a character I really feel a strong connection with or anything like that.
Yeah, still glad he's there for, or she's there for the fans, you know?
Yeah, totally. And we are, on top of getting these characters in the game, getting them all in the form of Amiibo.
Amiibo!
I can only imagine how excited you are to have a King K. Rool Amiibo.
Well, I mean, I never would have expected, like, you know, a Simon Belmont or Richter Belmont Amiibo, you know, let alone King K. Rool. There already is a Crom, just not in the Smash Brothers series.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, Dark Samus isn't one I'd ever expect to get either. So, yeah, that's going to be great adding all those to my collection.
I imagine you stroking your whiskers when you say that.
More like salivating with anticipation. But yeah, on top of the playable characters, there are also new assist trophy characters. So Zero from the Mega Man X series is in there. And then, you know, probably even more exciting than that is Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight! We're getting Shovel Knight in the game.
Yeah, that is kind of insane, but I'm very glad to see him.
Yeah, I mean, from such humble indie beginnings on Kickstarter, Shovel Knight really is making an appearance in Smash Brothers. And, you know, I know it's not the same as being a fully playable character, but who cares? The fact that he's in there at all is absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, would have been nice to have him playable, but you know what? I'm totally happy with him being an assist trophy, and I think it almost makes more sense.
It's a great start. Maybe it means that you know, next time he will show up as a playable character. It's just awesome to see him in there at all.
Totally.
Then on top of that, we have the Rathalos, the giant monster dragon dinosaur creature from the Monster Hunter series. And they also say that character is going to be a boss,
right,
which is interesting, since there really aren't bosses in Smash Brothers other than, you know, Master Hand or the characters that would show up like in Subspace Emissary.
Right.
So does that mean that the single player mode is going to have, you know, additional non-playable boss characters like that? It kind of seems like it must. So that's very interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, the more I think about it, all those reveal videos they keep showing have to kind of tip their hat that they're looking at doing something like a Subspace Emissary in this version. Because, you know, they're not just using them for reveal. They'll be in the game in some capacity, so.
Well, who knows? I mean, with the last game, they did something similar, and all those just end up being in there as really cool CG videos included on the cartridge. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, but, you know, it would be nice if it did.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I just feel like with the characters, like, dying in these videos, that it must mean something more. That's just my guess, but.
Well, I certainly hope it doesn't mean that all my favorite Nintendo characters are going to croak. But speaking of croaking, it was cool to see Cap'n there from Animal Crossing,
yeah,
running people over in his bus.
Yeah, I'll have you know, I think he's a turtle, right? Not a frog?
Yeah, actually, I believe he is a kappa, a mystical, mythical Japanese creature.
That's right.
But, you know, he's green. And by croaking, I meant the people who he ran over with the bus.
That's true. That's pretty awesome. Cap'n,
and I love the fact that there are going to be, you know, animations for like, you know, 70 characters, you know, trying to get out of the back of the bus. They're being driven off the screen.
I also think it's amazing that however many characters are in this game, which it's pretty high. It's like over 60 now or something.
Over 70, I believe.
Over 70.
Just playable characters.
Yeah. And then you think about Kirby having to become all of them. It's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is nuts. Also, shout out to the moon from Majora's Mask being an assist trophy.
Yeah, that was insane.
Yeah, that looks gnarly. I mean, how are you going to survive that, having the moon actually finally make its impact and crash into everything and destroy it all? So, yeah, lots of new characters, lots of assist trophies. As you were alluding to, lots of different music tracks, like over 800, and apparently 103 stages announced so far, not counting the battlefield or Omega modes, and you can turn off the hazards. I mean, before I would always go into battlefield mode if I wanted to view or play a stage without the hazards, but now you can just simply turn them off. Oh, and there's the exclusive new training mode stage where you can like measure stuff on a grid, and that in itself is nuts, and I'm sure that the hardcore players will really appreciate things like that.
Yeah, that's like fascinating. I'm glad that that's in there. I will probably never use it, but I know that some yeah, people will be very interested to use that. So,
yeah. I mean, personally, I'm a lot more excited about New Donk City Hall being in there as a stage.
With the one up girl soundtrack in the background?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was kind of hoping that Pauline might be in there as a playable character, but I will accept her being in there, just singing there in the background along with the rest of her band.
Yep, pretty cool.
That's Jump Up Superstar is the name of the tune, by the way.
I know. I never remember that. Speaking of levels, I think it's funny, you know, Sakurai even was like, what are we, nuts? Why do we have 103 levels? And then yeah. to think that there's like, you know, the other versions of each of those levels, and that really means there's like 300 levels.
Mm-hmm.
It's like unbelievable. At the end of this Nintendo Direct, I started to like laugh at just how ridiculous it is that all this stuff is in there.
Yeah, it's like, how do you fit so much stuff into one little tiny Switch cartridge? It's kind of insane.
Well, and it's just like piling on. Like there's features mm-hmm. on features and features. And like,
yeah.
you know, even being able to like switch stages in the middle of a stage.
Yeah, that's another cool feature too.
Yeah, there's just so many things that you're like, unbelievable. I can't believe there's so many options.
Yeah, I mean, it's like double number of stages from the previous game, which was 56, apparently.
Yeah, so. Well, that
absolutely crazy.
And in the last one, you couldn't play 8-player in all the stages. You could only do it in right. a handful. Now they're mm-hmm. saying that you can play the 8-player in every stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So lots of cool stuff. And then on top of that, we have new modes. There is the Squad Strike Elimination Battle that has 5-on-5 or 3-on-3 bouts. Also, a tourney mode for up to 32 players, and I'm actually kind of surprised. They're like, oh, that wasn't already in there? Okay, well, all right, now it is. Now it's official. And then that Smashdown mode, which I guess will go over very well in tournaments, since that's kind of one of the rules in the tournaments, is, you know, previously used fighters can't be used a lot of the time. So I think that's why that mode is in there specifically.
Yeah.
Just for the hardcore competitive players.
Yeah, I think that's a great take on that kind of playstyle.
Yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense with the esports scene.
Of course.
And then as we touched on earlier, there is also the return of the classic mode, traditional single-player experience. Seems a lot more straightforward, and perhaps that'll mean, you know, more enjoyable than what was in Smash Brothers for 3DS and for Wii U. I mean, I kind of liked having those there if you did want some extra complexity, but I also like just having the straightforward, normal, traditional mode as well, so that's good.
Yeah, I hope it'll be like... You know, sometimes you'll fight like 50 versions of some character.
Yeah, I mean, they show it a little bit, and it definitely gets varied up. Sometimes it's one opponent, sometimes it's a whole group of opponents.
Right.
And it does look like it's being tailored to the character you choose, so you'll sort of get a bit of a different experience every time. But I think the same experience every time you play through it.
Yeah, and just to imagine, like, Sakurai, like, planning the levels for each of those characters. Like, think yeah. about how much time that would be. I mean, it must not just be him, because that's like a lot of time.
Another new feature I'm excited about is that you can optionally turn on that final smash meter and then have that fill up, and then you're able to unleash your final smash without getting a smash ball.
Yeah, that is an interesting feature. The smash ball has kind of been, I don't know, there's been mixed feelings about that.
Well, to be honest, I kind of suck at destroying the smash ball. I'm always really good at attacking it right away, and then it gets away from me, then someone else attacks after that and breaks it, and they always get the power, and then I get wiped out, or at least, you know, that happens more than I would like. So I feel like, you know, turning this option on will finally give me a chance to have more fun with the final smashes than I often currently do, because it just seems like luck is never in my favor when I want to do that stuff.
By someone else stealing your smash ball, do you mean me?
Without a doubt. So yeah, lots of great stuff in there. On top of the stuff we already talked about, there are also new items and new Pokemon in the game.
Yeah, I thought Ditto looked really cool.
Oh yeah, definitely. That was one I liked as well, because instead of just, you know, copying other Pokemon, he actually copies the other fighters that are out there. That was definitely looking rad.
Yeah, that's kind of unbelievable. And then it's kind of cool to see some of the Sun and Moon characters in there as well.
Mm-hmm, yep, Solgaleo and Lunala looking pretty awesome and powerful.
Yeah, what was the name of the egg one, do you know?
Oh, you mean the Alolan Executor.
Yeah, that looks pretty awesome, too.
Yeah, it's like makes a giant wall to divide up the battlefield. That definitely could add some interesting tactics. And then, you know, last, but I guess not least, you know, Sakurai was hinting at this mysterious new mode. Do you have any inkling, no pun intended, what that mode could possibly be?
You know, I really don't, but I am very hopeful that it's something really fun single player.
You know, that's what I would really like it to be, since it is there accessible from the main menu. My best guesses are a really robust single player adventure along the lines of Subspace Emissary, or some sort of completely crazy, over-the-top, you know, custom character type of mode.
Yeah, I just feel like because this is a handheld game, it really begs for a single-player adventure. Whereas other Smash Brothers in the past probably could get away with not having something sort of in it.
Well, just from a personal level, it's definitely something I'd like to see return to the series. So I'd be very excited if that were the case.
Absolutely.
And then, at least over in Europe, I'm not sure if it's confirmed for North America yet, but there's going to be a Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Limited Edition that includes not only the game, but also a GameCube controller and a GameCube controller adapter. That's not exactly the most exciting limited edition out there. I mean, there's totally room for a limited edition Smash Bros. Personally, I like to see it include, you know, like a, you know, 28-disc soundtrack or something like that. But still, you know, better than nothing.
Yeah, I meant to ask you. I felt like you may be the only person I know who would walk around town with a Switch in their pocket with the headphone plugged in, listening to game tunes. But is that a feature you might take advantage of?
I'm not sure. I do like my game music, and I do like the idea of 800 awesome tunes that you can listen to anywhere. I don't really see myself using it, but certainly it's an interesting addition.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, kids potentially with their backpacks and stuff might be using that feature.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Anyway, overall, it was, I think, a fantastic Nintendo Direct as far as Smash reveals go. I think it way outperformed what they did back at E3, where it was only a couple of characters, and then just getting into all this, you know, little detailed stuff that, you know, maybe was a little hard to grasp at the surface level. But this, you know, new characters, new assist trophies, new stages, new modes, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, Smash Brothers looking even more exciting than it was before, and can't complain about that.
Yeah, it's great.
However, that was not the only bit of Nintendo news in recent days.
Uh-oh.
Nintendo has also been talking about some other upcoming titles, one of which is The World Ends With You Final Remix.
Hmm. What's up with that?
Well, they released a new trailer, and they gave a release date for the game. It is coming out on October 12th, and even though this is a Square Enix title, it is being published by Nintendo in North America, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is, of course, an update to the cult classic action RPG that is set in more or less modern Shibuya, or is it Shibuya of 10 years ago? I guess it's been like 10 or 11 years since the game came out, so, you know, early 2000s Shibuya. Did you ever play this game in its original form on DS?
I did, but only probably about a few hours of it.
I played it all the way through. I did thoroughly enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to this one. You know, it's got now HD visuals, which are looking pretty sharp. It's going to have some new story content with a new scenario and new characters, which is pretty excellent. There's even going to be a two-player mode in the game.
Yeah, I read about that. What does that entail?
I'm not really sure, but I believe, you know, each player uses a Joy-Con, and then they can both participate in battle together. I mean, that was one of the things about the original game, is that you are controlling two characters simultaneously.
That's right.
And the way you did that was you would control one with the control pad, and by pressing various directions on that, and then the other one with the touch screen, where you would swipe on the touch screen to, you know, execute various attacks. So I think in this one, you each would use a Joy-Con and sort of use it as basically a pointer that you're using to interact with the screen.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how this game does.
Well, I hope it does well because, you know, people really did like it before and it certainly deserves a second chance. And, you know, maybe if it does really well, we'll actually get a legitimate bona fide sequel. That would be really, really cool. But I am a little bit concerned about how these controls are going to work.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are two ways to play. One, you can play it in handheld mode, and then you're using the touch screen to swipe and execute attacks that way. Or if it's on the TV, you're using the Joy-Cons as pointers. Mm. And, you know, sort of, you know, doing virtual swiping that way. I'm just not sure how well that's going to last in a sustained long-term environment. And, you know, hopefully it's something that remains fun, but, you know, I was kind of wondering, you know, how can they convert this to traditional controls? And it seems kind of like maybe they weren't able to. I'm not sure it's a game you can actually play with the Pro Controller. So it's like, will, you know, pointing and doing these swiping motions with the Joy-Cons be really fun for the long term, it remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you play it, let me know.
Yeah, regardless, I definitely am looking forward to seeing this game come out in October. Like I said, it was tons of fun on DS, and I'm glad to see it making a comeback.
Yeah, between this and Okami coming out in a couple days, I feel like this it's really a good revival of old games that I haven't played.
Oh, yeah, totally. Another one that's coming not too far away that I'm quite looking forward to is Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Oh, yeah, isn't a demo out for that now?
Yes, a demo just came out for that, and you can download that and play through a handful of missions where you'll be introduced to Squad E. You get to meet Claude, the commander, Raz, the shock trooper, Kai, the sniper, and the other soldiers in the squad.
Have you played any other Valkyria Chronicles?
I have indeed. I played the original game when it first came out on PlayStation 3, and then I attempted to start playing the remastered version when it was on PlayStation 4, and I really, really like both games, but unfortunately I never finished them. I just always get distracted, and I really want to go back. But, you know, so far, this seems like it's very much cut from the same cloth as those previous games. It has, you know, a gorgeous art style. It has various character classes, such as, you know, infantry troopers, scouts, snipers, and then, you know, armored artillery units, as in, you know, you're controlling tanks. Like, Claude in this game actually drives around in a tank in the first mission you play and gets to battle enemy tanks that way.
Yeah, cool.
But the thing that's really cool about the game is that it combines turn-based strategy with real-time elements. So you see this overhead battlefield map from above, but then you select your units and it moves, you know, right into the battlefield, and you're then moving around in full 3D and moving and attacking more or less in real time. I mean, there's gauges that limit how far you can move and what you can do, and it's basically your stats that determine, you know, what you're doing rather than whether you have perfect aim or not. I mean, you have basically as much time as you want to line up your headshot or whatever. But I think it is a really, really cool mix of strategy and action.
Yeah, and shout out to Sega for releasing the demo on all the consoles at once. Nice work.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. And of course, if you play through this demo, the save data will transfer over into the full game when it comes out on September 25th, and even unlocks an exclusive bonus accessory you can equip in the full title.
That's my favorite when they actually do that, because I don't always love playing through a game all over again.
But yeah, the game looks great. I love the watercolor aesthetic. You know, it really exemplifies the contrast between these, you know, beautiful pastoral European style landscapes and then the destruction of the impending war. And like I said, it does feel very, very similar to the original Valkyria Chronicles, but you know, it hasn't been on Nintendo systems before. If you haven't played it, if you are intrigued by it in any way, you know, check out this demo, see what it's like. You know, we haven't gotten an Advance Wars in a long time, and though it really doesn't play like Advance Wars, it sort of scratches a similar itch. So I would definitely recommend fans of that title, you know, checking it out.
Yeah, I'm actually currently downloading this now, and I plan to give it a try.
All right, very cool. Let us move along from there and talk about some recent game impressions. Specifically, released last Friday, WarioWare Gold on the Nintendo 3DS.
Oh, yeah. Have you played this?
Oh, I definitely have. Did you pick it up?
I have not. I'm saving myself for Okami.
Shame, shame. Well, I definitely picked it up, and so far, I feel that it is great. As we discussed before, mm-hmm. when we were talking about the demo, it does indeed have, you know, traditional control pad and button-based minigames, touch-based minigames, and tilt-based minigames, as well as some microphone-activated minigames. I don't think I've unlocked any of those yet, but they are in there. But yeah, it has a huge variety of these fun yet simple micro-games, and as always, it is just addictive and fun trying to get a high score. You know, there's lots of familiar games in there. Like, I think there are 300 micro-games, and maybe only like 40 of them are new, I think is what I read.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to encounter a lot of familiar stuff, like, you know, picking the nose and sniffed up the snot and, you know, being the ninja to dodge the arrows and moving the umbrella to keep the cat dry and, you know, trying to get Link into the cave really quickly. But there are also, you know, new ones in there. And to be honest, it's been quite a long time since a new WarioWare game came out. It's been like 8 years or something. So there are some of them that I'm sure are not new, but I just have forgotten them since it's been such a long time. So they don't feel stale or done to death. So it kind of feels fresh, even if it's not, just because it's been, you know, such a long time. So there's been one of these things.
Yeah, you're actually making me nostalgia for the series just talking about it.
Well, it is, you know, really, really fun. And, you know, as always, every character has their own little story and games set to a particular theme, whether it's sports or NES games or, you know, as they call it, you know, real life, which is, you know, picking noses and trimming whiskers and stuff like that.
That's my normal day to day.
And I haven't played through, you know, all the games and modes or anything like that, but I do think there are Nintendo classics in all three categories. Like in the traditional category, instead of playing as 9-volt, you play as his mom.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's apparently a gamer too. And as 5-volt, you play Nintendo micro games based on all sorts of classic titles in order to get buff and lift a really, really heavy frying pan. And if that sounds insane, of course it is, because it's WarioWare.
Sounds fun. You're enjoying it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am having a blast. All the cutscenes are fully voiced too, which is something that I like. And there's lots of extra stuff going on top of just the regular micro games. Like, there are full Game & Watch minigames in here.
Oh.
There are, you know, various phones you can acquire, and then you enter the codes into these phones, and you get, like, funny messages. Oh, and then I think I mentioned before that there's this Amiibo sketch feature, but I hadn't had a chance to experience it, but now I have. And basically, it's just a way for you to earn coins. You go into this mode, you can scan up to 3 Amiibo per day. Wario sketches a picture, which you then sell for coins. The funny thing, of course, is if you give him the Wario Amiibo, he'll make some masterpiece, and he looks all, you know, studly and buff, and it's like this beautiful painting. If you give him anything else, it's, you know, like some kindergartner's drawing of Link or Mario or whatever.
That's very funny.
And I haven't, you know, had a chance to do too many of those yet, but, you know, it's very WarioWare appropriate and makes tons of sense for Wario to do it that way. I'm looking forward to going through my other, you know, 100 plus Amiibo and seeing what comes out of those.
If you haven't done Box Boy yet, will you please?
Perhaps I will do that one next. Also, I want to check out and see what my Nintendo cereal box does. That should be an interesting one.
Yeah, no kidding. Might make him hungry.
Lots of extra goodies and things of that nature. And also, I think I've totally developed a crush on Jimmy T's groupies.
Oh?
Yeah, that's all I can really say about that. But anyway, yeah, I'm really super enjoying the game so far, even though, you know, probably a brand new from the ground up game would have been even better. But still, this is ridiculously fun. The presentation is fantastic. Lots of extra stuff. You know, even if you have relegated your 3DS to a drawer somewhere, I say pull it out, dust it off, play this game. It's pretty darn great.
All right. I might at least try the demo.
Yeah, it's free. Why not? You got nothing to lose. Now, I would love to give some impressions of some other recent releases, such as the cool indies that have come out this week, such as Flipping Death, Dead Cells, and Overcooked 2.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I have not had a chance to play any of those. I don't imagine you have either.
I have not.
Didn't really think so. Hopefully we'll get a chance soon. However, I did get a chance to watch the first two episodes of the Mega Man Fully Charged cartoon when they aired on the Cartoon Network over this past weekend.
Oh yeah? How'd that go?
Well, I have to say, it is not my favorite representation of Mega Man. You know, it's not all bad or anything like that. And these first two episodes, they introduce the world of Mega Man Fully Charged and feature him battling Fire Man, which, you know, on the surface is okay. You get to meet this gigantic, massive version of Dr. Light. I don't understand why he's so huge.
He's ripped.
Yeah, he is. You get to meet Mega Man's human, you know, sister, for lack of a better word, Suna. And, you know, Mega Man in this continuity, he is known as Aki Light, and, you know, is, you know, basically Dr. Light's, you know, robot son. And then Mega Man is like his secret identity, alter ego. And so far, it appears that Dr. Light doesn't even know that he's Mega Man, or Dr. Light is, you know, pretending to not realize that he is Mega Man.
That's strange.
And Mega Man and his sister are also friends at school with this dude named Bert Wily. So, you know, is that Dr. Wily's son, or in this continuity, does that mean Dr. Wily is only like a 10-year-old? Is he going to have a horrible accident soon that, you know, burns off all his hair, and so he turns into the diabolical Dr. Wily, or is there a separate Dr. Wily? It'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah, totally. Sounds a little Spider-Man-ish or something.
Yeah, it does have a little bit more of a, you know, superhero twist to it. And I guess in terms of, you know, being more familiar with your adversaries like that, yeah, I can see why you would say that. Another twist is that Mega Man does not have to actually destroy his enemy to gain his powers in this show. Mm. So there are other ways for him to do things. So on the surface, it doesn't sound so bad. And I actually kind of like the designs and art as well. And, you know, if they made a Mega Man game that looked like this and was fully 3D, I would probably be down with it. Hmm. I kind of like the sprite art transitions and music as well.
Are you going to keep watching it?
Well, I probably am, but that is in spite of the fact that when it comes to the story, I did not like it much at all. It is just very, very dumbed down. It has simple writing. It has pretty lame jokes and some very simplistic, childish storytelling. Well, touche. But yeah, you know, it touches on like these important topics like, you know, prejudice and racism and equality. And like the concept of this show is, you know, can humans and robots coexist? But it's just, you know, so shallow and unsubtle. And like the bad guy is this racist dude who sounds like a Confederate Civil War reject. And, you know, it just feels like they are, you know, beating my head in with the sledgehammer of plot.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you know, we talked about this guy before, but there's also Mega Mini, who is this little robot that lives in Mega Man's head, and he seemed kind of annoying in the teaser stuff, but he is super annoying in the real show, and he just, you know, pops out of Mega Man's head, and he makes the lamest, dumbest jokes, and his voice is annoying, and he is just not all likable, and I'm like, man, I wish that Dr. Light would just crush him with his giant ham hock fist.
I keep waiting to talk to your Hoff Mini.
Depending on which Hoff Mini you're talking about, that could be interpreted very, very disturbingly.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Anyway, there is a good amount of action, but Fireman's fire, for some reason, doesn't burn anything, which is, you know, very strange. Hmm. You know, he keeps blasting Mega Man, but, you know, apparently the fire doesn't set anything on fire for the most part. But then it ends with Mega Man and his human friends just sort of coming together and expounding the virtues of friendship and unity, and then the bad guy just kind of goes away. So, you know, this is not a Disney or Pixar production that works on multiple levels for kids and adults. I feel it's very dumbed down, and the appeal to older viewers is just, oh, you know, here's a character you know, here's a reference you might recognize, you know, here's some old school looking sprites, here's a nod to the game. And apparently the viewership was, like, absolutely abysmal on Cartoon Network, from what I understand. But you asked earlier, will I keep watching? I probably will, but, you know, it's sort of just out of my love for Mega Man and, you know, sort of like, you know, train wreck here. Got to keep watching anyway.
I was going to say, you basically can't let anything Mega Man just exist without knowing what it is about.
That's right. I got to check it out. Who knows? Maybe it'll improve, but, you know, I'm not really betting on it.
All right. Well, keep me posted.
Will do. Okay, why don't we move along from here and answer a few listener letters. So first of all, we have a few belated Nintendo Power 30th anniversary memories. You know, we were supposed to read these a couple episodes ago. These came in late, but, you know, who are we to ignore them? So I will read these here. This first one comes from listener Tony, who writes, I miss the days when I would come home and there would be a Nintendo Power waiting for me to return from school. I started subscribing to them around the GameCube era, since that was when I was allowed to subscribe, but had always looked them over at the library before that. The official player's guides were always the best around, and I loved resubbing and getting a new one as a gift. I also remember getting the Four Swords Adventure Pack that came with the game, the extra GBA to GCN cable, the guide, and a shirt. I was very disappointed when Nintendo Power shut down, but was ecstatic when I found out you guys made a podcast. Thank you for helping Nintendo Power live on. He continues, I wanted to see if you both could give us an update on how far you've gotten in Nintendo's big recent games, such as Mario plus Rabbids, Super Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, and others. Thank you, as always.
Oh boy, I'm probably embarrassed to admit how far I am in some of these games, but in Mario Plus Rabbids, I think I made it to about the third world, although I really do want to go back and play it now that the Donkey Kong DLC is out.
Okay.
Mario Odyssey, oh man, that is the one I'm really ashamed of. I need to sit down and play that game. I can't even tell you how far I am in the game, but I know I've got a lot of work to do.
Mm.
And Breath of the Wild I've beaten, I just have not played the DLC yet. However, I have purchased it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, both packs, whatever.
Did you conquer all the shrines?
No.
Uh-huh.
But I'm close.
Well, as for myself, well, at least you're further than me in Mario Plus Rabbids, because I don't own that one, so I have made no progress in that. But in Super Mario Odyssey, I have beat the game. I conquered all the extra levels, including the Long Journey's End in the Darker Side Kingdom. I then started, you know, collecting all the extra moons and probably got like 90% of the way through Steam Gardens before I got distracted by other things. So I still have a lot of extra moons to get, and you know, I hope I get back to that one of these days. For Breath of the Wild, I have conquered all the shrines and finished the game, as well as the Champion's Ballad, but I still have plenty of Korok seeds to find, and I still have the last Master Sword trial to overcome.
Tisk, tisk.
This also seems like a good place to mention my progress on Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which I have finally beat after putting in more than 200 hours and completing pretty much every side quest that's possible to beat before the credits roll. You know, I love the world, I generally like the story and the characters, I love exploring, but, you know, I hate the occasional awful difficulty spikes, and the game really is too clunky for its own good. There are just so many systems that seem redundant, and so many things that are unexplained, and, you know, there are even, like, new mechanics introduced at the very end of the game. I'm like, why are they adding new stuff? This is so unnecessary. I just feel like the game should have been streamlined to include, you know, only the best of this stuff. You know, they're like literally like at least 7 ways to level up your characters, and that just seems ridiculous. So I finally finished that one. I like it in spite of its flaws, but I did want to give an update on that title finally.
Yeah, and I'll use this time to tell you I also beat Bloodstained Curse of the Moon the other day on Veteran.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
I have not done that myself yet. Very cool.
I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one.
Okay. Well, our next letter comes from Jason Lee, who writes, "My first issue of Nintendo Power was number 4, although I also got issue number 1 as a free bonus. Like everyone else, I'd eagerly read them cover to cover each time I received one. I remember getting excited when they started a new section called Epic Center that was dedicated to RPGs. I don't think it lasted long, but I liked knowing RPGs would have a section all to themselves. One thing I did not like was the comics. At the time, I felt they were taking up space that should have been dedicated to games. I later learned that really wasn't the case, but I despised them before I learned they were covering for a lack of games. I did lapse around 3 years, partly because of the comics, but mostly due to the discovery of the internet. I eventually came back at issue 192. It was good timing because the very next issue, 193, was a redesign of NP. I couldn't have been happier with it. I stayed with NP till the end. I remember reading that last issue, getting close to the end, and then reading the final Nestor comic. I thought it ended perfectly. I'm not ashamed to admit my throat had a large lump and my eyes wired up as I closed the magazine. It was the end of an era."
Nah.
Yeah, a lot of us felt that way. I'm not sure that's totally accurate, though, about the comics. I mean, I totally relate to not liking them, because I also felt, oh, this should have been space dedicated to games.
Sure.
I don't think it was, you know, because they had a lack of things to cover, though. I think it was just because, you know, they had comics. Why not include them? I mean, I think they beefed up the page count to include, you know, 24 pages of comics each month, and you just would have had a 24-page shorter magazine if they weren't there.
Right. And it feels like he got back into the subscription right around the time we started.
Yeah, just at the right time. I started, I think, 6 issues after that at 198. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So nicely done.
Indeed.
This next one comes from Jacket K, and he says, "I got my first issue way back when I was too young to remember things. I got my mom to buy it, and I got a subscription to Nintendo Power shortly after. I think I may not have renewed my subscription sometime in college, but I do recall buying a few of the last issues off the stand during my college year. Had to see how such a huge part of my childhood came to its end, and it certainly was worth it. P.S. I love how the Nintendo Power description for the Power Glove mentions technically when talking about working with the ultrasound. Because technically, the Power Glove is supposed to be motion control. Or technically, it should work in general.
Yes, that is very true. That's what I found most amusing about that coverage in the magazine also. Does it work with ultrasound? I don't even know if that's true, but yes, I totally agree. When you're talking about the power glove, it would have been nice if it had worked at all. But hey, maybe it paved the way for Wii Remotes and Joy-Cons, so maybe we got something out of it after all. This next one comes from listener Jeffrey Skull, who writes, I missed the window to write in about Nintendo Power, but better late than never, right? I feel like it is always said that the magazine inflated the scores of their games, but if you actually look closely, that was not the case. Even games like Super Mario Bros. 3 didn't get a perfect score on that original wonky scoring system the magazine had. Also, I feel like the more pages a game got usually matched up well with how good a game was. I remember the hype for Bart vs. the Space Mutants was through the roof, but that game did not get a cover story, and I quickly found out why once I had wasted my money on that game. Also, when I returned to the magazine during the Wii days, I was so happy to see how well the magazine had aged. I thoroughly enjoyed every issue from then till the end and picked up games such as Konoha, Shantae, 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, and Cooking Mama, thanks to the magazine. Now I look forward every week to your podcast to scratch my Nintendo Power itch.
I gotta say, I'm noticing a trend in that a lot of people picked it up towards the end of its life, and I'm happy that we could kind of do it justice into its twilight years.
Yeah, it seems like the redesign did actually do its job of bringing people back, and I appreciate him giving the shout-out to Konoha, Shantae, 999, and Cookie Mama, all personal favorites of mine as well. He then also continues, however, separate question, now that Nintendo and Microsoft seem to be getting along and teaming up against Sony, can we imagine a Nintendo Rare partnership on a game a la Nintendo Ubisoft that would drop on both the Switch and the Xbox One? If so, what game would you like to see? I doubt Nintendo would let their characters appear on the Xbox, so my picks would be a new RC Pro-Am game as an eShop release and a new Banjo-Kazooie game for a full retail release.
That separate question is a tough one. You have any thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I guess my first choice would be to see this new Battletoads game they're working on actually come out on Nintendo systems as well as on the Xbox One. So I guess that's perhaps too obvious a choice.
And that actually seems likely.
I wonder. But beyond that, you know, I'd love to see, you know, the opportunity to have a lot of the classic games come back, you know, bring back, I mean, they don't have virtual console, I guess, anymore, but they are going to have, you know, NES classics available with Nintendo Switch Online. So, you know, the original Battletoads, Wizards and Warriors, I'd love to see make a comeback.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then however it's done, you know, the original N64 versions of Banjo-Kazooie and GoldenEye on Nintendo hardware, of course, would be amazing. And, you know, I'd love to see Banjo and Kazooie appear in Smash Brothers, too.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. And I'm a huge RC Pro-Am fan, for the record.
I guess maybe another good possibility, if they wanted to do a partnership that appeared on both systems. This is, you know, the biggest long shot that would never happen. But I love the original Conker, so I would like to see a brand new Conker game, you know, loud and rude as ever.
And I would just settle for Blast Corps.
Okay, good enough. This last message we have came via Twitter, and I admit it actually showed up weeks ago, and somehow I missed it. But as the last writer said, better late than never. At any rate, this comes from @Blastoise999, and he writes, I feel like the Switch is just retreads. When will we get new games that are worth buying the day they come out? I've been replaying old SNES games in the meantime. Not a big fan of $80 cardboard minigames.
I feel like this guy's trolling.
Well, I don't. I mean, I can actually see where he's coming from. If you look at what's come out this year in particular, it has been a lot of ports and rehashes. You know, what have we got so far? The lineup in 2018 includes Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, Captain Toad, Hyrule Warriors, Go Vacation. You know, a lot of those are great games, but, you know, they're sort of less great if you already have them. So I kind of see where he's coming from. I mean, obviously there's, you know, other stuff that came out like last year, like Odyssey and Breath of the Wild and, you know, lots of other good stuff. But I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I can see that. But I actually think that there's a lot of great content. I mean, there's almost like too much for me to play right now. A lot of the games are, you know, $15 or $20 range. So it makes it even easier to kind of get involved.
Right, totally. And that's what I would say to him is that there are actually, you know, a ton of great games out there. It's just not necessarily first party or even the traditional third parties. A lot of these are coming from indie publishers, and there are tons of them. We're getting more and more every week. And so if you just look at the Switch as, you know, a system that gives you an opportunity to play all these incredible games, you know, you will not be let down. There is more stuff to do and experience and play than you'll know what to do with, and they will absolutely keep you occupied between the big brand new first party releases. So that would be my advice to at Blastoise999.
Yeah, and if he likes old SNES games, I definitely recommend Octopath Traveler.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that had not actually come out when he wrote this letter, but yeah, that's definitely one to pick up if you are into classic 16-bit titles. Lots of good nostalgia and modern gameplay as well.
Yep.
That's totally true. All right, that takes care of our letters for this week. So let us take an intermission, and then we come back. We will discuss this week's big topic, which is what we would like to see from a redesigned Switch. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is redesigning the Nintendo Switch. You know, it's only been about a year and a half or so since the Nintendo Switch launched, but as we know, Nintendo is always in the process of updating and redesigning their hardware. Even if the public doesn't know about it yet, there's a good chance they are already working on a new version of the very popular system.
Yeah, probably just in the concept phase, obviously, but in some capacity, yeah, they always kind of keep their eye on, you know, I think the sales and where there might be like a trailing off and where they can potentially bump up the system sales again with some kind of redesign or color changing.
Or maybe it's something they can do to save costs and, you know, cut expenses on their end.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
Yeah, it is something that is always on their mind, whether we are consciously aware of it or not. So we thought, hey, let's beat them to the punch. Let us come out ahead and discuss what we would like to see out of a Switch redesign.
Sweet.
So, Pete, you were the one who brought this idea to my attention, so I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you what you would like to see out of a redesigned Nintendo Switch.
Well, Chris, I think I'm going to go and say that, you know, when you think of a Switch redesign, I think, to me, what I think about is, do you think that Nintendo would potentially ever go with just a handheld version?
Well, I think it is very, very possible. And you know, that's something that Nintendo has said from the very beginning. Before we ever knew what Switch was, they said, this isn't necessarily just a system. This could be a platform. You know, much like the way that iOS is for Apple, and it's across various forms of iPads and iPods and iPhones, they were kind of indicating, yes, you know, the idea for Switch could exist across multiple devices, and certainly, I too think there could be room for simply a handheld version of the Switch. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, that's kind of where my mind was going as well.
Yeah, so I think if there was a redesigned Switch and they wanted to really have a streamlined version, I could imagine a version where the Joy-Cons don't come off of the handheld.
Yes, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. And in my mind, this thing would be called the Switch SP. And in this case, it would stand for Super Portable. And it would just be a dedicated portable system with the controls attached. It would actually be, you know, for me, I would want something that is smaller, more compact, and you actually can just fit in your pocket and carry it around with you like I did for so many years with my 3DS.
Yep. And I don't think that that would necessarily come at a cost. I don't think... you know, I don't think the screen would be substantially smaller. I think they would just kind of condense everything a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if they had to, perhaps it would be a smaller screen. I don't think I would mind a smaller screen as long as they maintain the resolution. In fact, if anything, you know, maybe they would want to increase the resolution. You know, I still want, you know, a high quality game on a high quality system. And, you know, if they did this, you know, I'd actually kind of want them to up the power. So, you know, even though it's a handheld only system, you're still getting that full resolution and full frame rate out of the system that you would get when you attach it to the TV normally.
Yeah, I wondered about that, you know, especially if they could use a higher resolution screen, if using the extra processing power would actually help make the game look better in handheld mode.
Well, I'd like to see them do that. You know, maybe this means that this redesigned version would potentially, you know, cost more than even the standard version. But, you know, that's what this would be for. This would be for people who really want to get that high-end portable experience, I think.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask, do you imagine in this version, if such a version existed, that you would still be able to connect it to the TV, like, via a cord? So you wouldn't necessarily dock it, but you would be able to still, you know, hook a cord from your system to the TV and then use your new Switch Slim like a controller for your television.
Possibly. I mean, you know, in my head, that isn't how it would be. I see this being as sort of a dedicated portable machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd still like to think that, you know, maybe this is where the Nintendo Switch Online and the Nintendo Network really comes into play, and you'd be able to, like, transfer your save data, you know, from the cloud to either system. So
right.
You could either be playing on the go with this dedicated portable, or you'd be able to play it, you know, on your TV with your regular Switch system that's mm-hmm. always docked there, which is basically what mine is like. You know, I very rarely take it out to play in handheld mode. So, you know, in my head, in this scenario, no, it would not plug into the TV.
Hmm. I do actually agree with you, and I could see that being the case, especially if save data was easy to transfer and all that. Then you kind of have your portable version, and then you kind of leave your old school one kind of always docked.
Yep, that's how I see it. Of course, with this new version, you know, I'd still want to have all the functionality of a regular Switch system. So even though you wouldn't be able to disconnect the Joy-Cons, you would still have, you know, that Bluetooth functionality. So you could still, you know, buy separate Joy-Cons. You could still get the Pro Controller. You could
right.
still get other accessories. And that way you could still have, you know, 4-player games, 2-player games, still take advantage of all those motion controls and all that stuff, you know, what have you. But despite having a system that's dedicated for handheld play, you know, would still have the stand. You'd still be able to, you know, stand it up and use it as a standalone monitor. You'd still be able to do multiplayer stuff that way. That's kind of what I would like to see
mm-hmm.
out of a, you know, purely portable Switch.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in regards to the stand, you know, I think that, you know, one oversight that I think we kind of can all agree on with the Switch is just the fact that the stand is a little bit of an afterthought, and that there's really no good way to charge while it's in stand mode, except for
the
new Nintendo adapter that's coming out in Japan, apparently.
Yeah, that's the main reason I don't play mine that much in handheld mode, because it's like, well, if I want to charge it while I'm playing, then I have to unplug it from the dock and, you know, open that weird little plastic case and take out the cable that way and then move the cable somewhere where it can reach. So yeah, that is sort of a big deal. So yes, I do like the idea of some sort of new solution for that.
Yeah, and I'd imagine something like that being, you know, just built into the system. In addition, you know, another thing I could really see being impactful for people would be having more memory built in it from the get-go. Right now it comes with a 32 gig, which is fine, but I think, you know, especially compared to the other consoles, and since, you know, like me, I buy a lot of my games digitally,
mm-hmm.
I think that having something like a 128 out of the box, or even a 64 out of the box, I think would be a little bit more reasonable for a lot of users.
Yeah, definitely. I think would definitely have more internal memory right out of the gate, and then probably more capacity to add even, you know, bigger cards than the current Switch is capable of using.
Yeah.
Although I imagine that could be beefed up, you know, with some sort of software revision.
Yeah, definitely. And right now, I mean, I think I've seen some pretty large gigabyte cards available, but they're still
yes,
they're
there
still
are.
Kind of expensive. But every year, you know, every 6 months, they probably drop a little bit in price. So you can pick up a 128 gig for, you know, $32 now if you're looking for the right deal.
Yeah, regardless, it does seem like something that would be very important on a dedicated portable system.
Yeah, I think it just kind of gives, especially parents, a better value for your money.
Now, you know, one thing that kind of hinders the Switch being, you know, purely portable now, you know, as I mentioned before, is the size. But in addition to that, you know, these joysticks do stick out a little bit. So I'm thinking in this hypothetical redesigned system, you know, maybe the joysticks would be made a little smaller and flatter. Maybe they'd be much closer to the circle pads that we got on 3DS. I don't think that would necessarily be a bad idea.
I'm going to argue a little bit on that one. I do love the way the Joy-Cons work. And I do love the ability to, you know, kind of click down for a certain functionality in games.
Oh, yeah, that is pretty key. So somehow they have to still incorporate that. That's a good point. But, you know, I want something that I can slide in and out of my pocket without worrying about, you know, breaking the stick or something like that. And while we're talking about, you know, changing the controls a little bit, I would also replace those buttons on the left Joy-Con with a traditional, you know, standard top-of-the-line Nintendo control pad, you know, the D-pad, as people call it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason. It's not like you have to disconnect it and you'd be using it as buttons some of the time. You know, if it's dedicated there as part of the unit, I think that would be the perfect opportunity to, you know, just give it the traditional Nintendo feel that, you know, so many of us actually want it to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that actually being a thing.
And while we were at it, you know, if we're updating the interface a little bit, I would also, you know, add a microphone, you know, just so it has, you know, some of the functionality that you could get out of 3DS games that, you know, you can't really do with the Switch necessarily. I mean, could it be used for chatting? If it could, that would be fantastic. But I'm talking about games where traditionally you might, you know, blow into the mic or talk into the mic, yell objection into the mic, for example. And, you know, I would love to see that come back. It's just a little thing, but, you know, I feel like it goes a long way.
Well, especially if they ever release an Odama port.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking of course.
Now, of course, with all of this, you know, if it is a dedicated handheld, I think the key thing that people would especially want would be slightly better battery life.
Oh, yes. That would be important, for sure.
You know, especially if you don't really have the option of ever, you know, playing it on a screen, I think that would become especially important to have. Not that the Switch currently is that bad, coming in at around 3 or 4 hours. I think that, you know, even something that went up to like 6 hours would be a little bit more consumer-friendly, I think, for most people, especially on like flights and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have to agree. I feel like that's something that Nintendo is always cognizant of and something they are, you know, always kind of looking into the technology, seeing what they can do. And if there ever is a redesign of the system, you know that's going to be one of the features that they do improve.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because it always kind of gets married with the performance enhancement. So it's like if
the graphics get
better, the system uses more resources, and then all of a sudden you need a bigger battery just to have the same battery life.
Yeah, that's true. With my request for, you know, full 1080p resolution on the screen and, you know, the full, you know, 60 frames per second frame rate like you get on the docked version, you know, I guess it's kind of a lot asking for a better battery performance as well. But, you know, if it means a little bit bigger battery, a little bit more thickness, you know, as long as it doesn't get too out of control, I'm okay with that. And like I said, I am okay paying a premium price for a premium handheld system, too.
Right. All right. Well, I think, you know, that kind of covers the hardware side of things, but on the software side of things, you know, have you had any thoughts about that?
I definitely have. And, you know, if we were having, you know, the Switch super portable, of course, I would love to see the return of Street Pass. I love my Street Passing. And it's like, you know, why not? I think a lot of people really enjoyed that. Those mini games were fun.
Yep.
It gave you a really good reason to carry it around all the time. It's something that I miss with Switch, and I'd love to see that make a comeback. So that'd be the first thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you and me both. I think Street Pass was the sleeper hit of the 3DS, and I think that it's a real shame that it's not in the Switch, especially considering, you know, all the conventions people go to and, you know, just everyday life, you know, being able to street pass with people randomly.
Right. Although, as it is currently, I don't take it out of the house very often because I don't find it very portable. Handheld, yes. Portable, not really. But if it were portable, that's really where it becomes, you know, crucial.
Right. And then, you know, of course, in updating StreetPass, I would love to see a little bit, you know, the games be a little bit different, new takes on the...
Oh, yeah, totally.
On the abilities to play with people that you StreetPass with.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the games that you get, like, pictures of could potentially be even more elaborate. And then, of course, upping the number of people that you can StreetPass with at once. from 10 to even 20 would be, you know, a world of difference.
Yes, that would be amazing. Just don't charge us extra for that guest room like they did last time. Biggest waste of money ever. Were there any other software features you'd want to see?
You know, I have a weird pie-in-the-sky type request.
Oh, yeah?
You know, PictoChat was pretty cool back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just kind of went to the wayside. So I guess, you know, if the Switch were a handheld only, I would like to see some sort of local chat. Especially, you know, given being at a convention or being at some event where you would have the potential to chat with like a bunch of other people, I could see something like a PictoChat making sort of a fun, triumphant return.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool, too. Yeah, sure. Why not?
And maybe even as if it's a local version of sort of Miiverse, something in the middle there, where it's maybe not quite PictoChat, maybe not quite Miiverse, but something in that wheelhouse, I think, could make sense.
Well, I was a big fan of Miiverse and was sorry to see it go, so I wouldn't complain about that either. Of course, you know, I feel like if you're going to have a portable system like this, and, you know, just the way that, you know, things are trending, the way that you are buying fewer cartridge-based games and, you know, kind of going all digital in on this, you know, it makes me think, you know, along with this, of course, you know, the redesign we keep talking about with the eShop would be, you know, very, very important, you know, make things way more searchable, make us be able to find things, you know, be able to search everything, you know, by genre, be able to just browse alphabetically, you know, do all that stuff. I think that would work very well for a system like this. But I also, you know, kind of think, is a cartridge slot even necessary? Should they consider going just pure digital on the system?
Wow. That's a revelation for you, Hoff.
Well, I'm not saying it's something that I would necessarily want, but do you think it would be a good idea?
You know, that I feel like that's such a slippery slope. I feel like people really like their option of being able to still own games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always a bummer when you buy something and your whole catalog of games becomes obsolete.
Yes.
I don't know. I think the games are so dang small to begin with that I don't mind keeping the cartridge port. But sure enough, it probably would save some cost. And it would sort of force people to kind of think more digitally.
So here's what I would do. You know, I would have this fictitious Switch SP that did retain the cartridge slot. But then, you know, if that works out for them, then the next iteration would be the Switch SP EX. And that one would be full digital.
Wow.
There'd be no cartridge slot for that one. You know, in that case, you know, being able to transfer, you know, your saved data between systems becomes even more important. You know, also, I would really like there to be a way that if you did already own the cartridge version, you'd be able to get a digital-only version on your handheld system for, you know, just a pittance, maybe even free somehow, if you already own the cartridge on your home Switch system. You know, again, you're going back to that Apple analogy. You don't have to buy the same software on your iPhone and iPad. You know, you buy it once, you get it on both. Would that pertain only to digital? You know, I'd like them to find a way to, you know, make it work so if you bought the cartridge for your home machine, you could still get the digital version, you know, at least at a discount on the dedicated handheld. But then, on top of being digital only, well, obviously then that means that online is even more important. So I would love to see it have, you know, full online functionality, not just be tied to Wi-Fi. Obviously, you know, that does add price, but being able to, you know, go online all by itself, you know, obviously that's something you have to subscribe to as well. But, you know, that then gives you the entire package. You know, then, you know, you're full digital, you're full online. You know, that's sort of the premium, super premium, I should say, handheld Switch system.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like the idea of it being fully online, but I do think that that's still, I don't know, there's still not like an ideal scenario for that.
Well, I mean, like you said, it can be a slippery slope. There are, you know, companies that have tried that before. You know, the Vita tried coming out with a version that, you know, had, I guess it was 3G back then. Yeah. I don't think that did great for them. Also, there was a version of, I think it was the PSP that was digital only. That didn't go great for them. But, you know, things have evolved a long time since then. Things have improved dramatically. Technology has improved dramatically. And again, this wouldn't be like, you know, my only redesign system.
Yep.
You know, I would initially go with something that still had traditional features and, you know, is still Wi-Fi only. But then, you know, if you want this other thing, sure, why not? Let's put it out there, make it available to people.
Yeah, right? I mean, I definitely like having the option available for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I would really like in my next Switch would be just Bluetooth headphone support.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now that everything's wireless, it's like when you're sitting around, it's kind of nice to be able to just hold the console and pop your headphones in and no one knows you're really listening to your system.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hadn't even considered that, but you make a very good point. Much easier to listen to those 800 Smash Brothers tracks when you don't have that cord hanging out of your backpack.
Yeah, you can even do it on the sly, so mm-hmm. people don't even know.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, anything else you have to add to this Switch redesign, or does that kind of cover the whole thing?
I think that that about does it. You know, of course, there's always the option of colors, and
yeah,
do you make mm-hmm. the whole thing metal like they did with the Game Boy Micro?
Hmm.
You know, I think there's some aesthetic designs that could go on for it.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking too.
You know, when you look at the original 3DS versus, you know, the new 3DS, it was wholly different. The original version kind of looked like this weird angular design, and then the later one came out and it was all slimmed down and kind of streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
It does make you wonder what a Switch could look like if they did give it quite an overhaul.
Yeah, I have to admit, from a visual standpoint, I'm really not sure what kind of thing I would want. I kind of, you know, leave that in Nintendo's capable hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the feature set that, you know, really comes to mind.
Yeah, I think the only thing I could say is that a metal version, you know, something that's a little bit more sturdy, I guess, could potentially be appealing to me,
mm-hmm.
if only because, you know, that way if you drop it or it gets kind of bumped around in your bag, it's not going to, or I guess overheat even, as, you know, I've heard some stories of Switches cracking and stuff like that.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, I think that could combat that a little bit, but, you know, I don't really have any super preference on that.
Yeah, but, you know, as far as, you know, other, you know, sort of redesigns go, I do think there is lots of room for specially artistically enhanced versions of the Switch that, you know, aren't really any different from what they are now. But, you know, I feel like, you know, that's got to be coming down the road. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't already. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had some very interesting controller options.
Yeah, like the Splatoon one.
Yep, Splatoon Joy-Cons, and then Xenoblade Chronicles Pro controller. But it's like, when are we going to get a Switch that's, you know, all covered up and decked out in, you know, some sort of custom Smash Brothers design with, you know, the cross logo on the side and other Smash Brothers elements integrated into it? You know, I could see them selling something like that and, you know, making bank with it.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's to say nothing of, you know, other franchises. You know, when Fire Emblem Three Houses hits, there could be a Fire Emblem version. Obviously, there's always room for Zelda and Mario and, oh, geez, the Pokemon stuff, you know, the yellow system with the Pikachu or whoever on it. Yeah, they could just totally go to town with that. Don't know what they're waiting for.
Well, I'm just waiting for the Play It Loud version that's like see-through purple.
Oh, I would totally buy that. Yeah, I guess eventually after they went through all this, and once they gave us the Switch SPEX, then I guess the other way to go is to make something that you know, is more kid-friendly, you know, more resilient, doesn't have you know, the online, you know, would of course have cartridges and looks you know, sort of funky and bright and colorful, kind of like they did with the 2DS,
yeah.
You know, the one looks like a, you know, a wedge to you know, prop stop. Open the door. Yes, exactly. So then they go that way after a while. So, yeah, I think there's room for all these things. And, you know, I do miss, you know, the idea of dedicated handheld systems. I mean, obviously, the 3DS is still going, but, you know, it is totally winding down. So if I had another Nintendo system to constantly carry around in my pocket, even if it's just a variation on the Switch I've hooked up to my TV, you know, I'm down with that.
Yep. Makes sense to me.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Because you know there's going to be a redesign eventually.
Yeah, that's almost something you can definitely bank on.
Yes, indeed.
But honestly, I'd like to hear if we missed anything. I wonder if the listeners have anything that they would like to see out of a new Switch redesign.
Oh, yeah, for sure. As always, the mailbag is always open. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And with that said, I guess it's time to bring this episode of the podcast to a close.
Oh?
Well, I mean, I guess we do have time for one more thing, I suppose.
What is that? What do we have this week?
Well, that would be, of course, a dramatic reading. And this time is from the pages of Nintendo Power Volume 6. It is a preview of the NES game Monster Party. There is a lengthy lead-in to this party that sets up the bizarre plot in this innocent tale of a boy and his monster friend. Bert, a monster dragon, has recruited Mark, armed only with his trusty baseball bat, and flown the youngster back to Bert's distant planet, where the two of them can merge to defeat the terrible monsters that have taken over. Throughout his mission, if Mark is able to obtain the secret item, he will be able to transform into Bert. Each stage has its own individual gameplay style: scrolling, puzzles, conflicts, stage bosses, and a password code, and firmly holds a player's interest. But something is amiss, and Mark will have to complete his mission to discover what it is. The fairly lengthy ending with a surprise twist is a nice payoff for completing the game.
Okay. A boy and his monster.
Yes. I admit, I have never played this game. I don't really know much about it, but I have heard that, you know, in general, it's supposed to be fairly good. Have you ever played it?
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, I remember this one, but like I said, I have never actually, you know, played it one bit. And judging from this preview, it's kind of understandable why. It doesn't really give a very good description. It just makes it sound kind of weird. I mean, I know it does have, you know, various modes such as scrolling. You know, that's very exciting. I love that scrolling. But yeah, I mean, it tells me almost nothing. So I guess it's no surprise that this game was not on my radar back in the day.
I think I like conflict myself.
Yes, conflict. That was another one of my favorite game genres. conflict and scrolling. Those are two of the best.
This game is called A Boy and His Monster?
No, it is called Monster Party.
Oh, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I've seen this cover.
But, yeah, I don't really know what it's about, even after reading this preview. Don't really know what it's about.
I'm looking at it now, and, yeah, it looks like a game.
Yes, yes, it does.
What year did this come out?
I don't know for sure, but, you know, this preview is from 1989, so probably around then.
I'm seeing a screenshot where he's talking to, like, a boss, and it says, "Sorry, I'm dead."
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a strange game. That I know for sure.
Well, you play this and let me know how it is.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, that takes care of everything for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
There ain't no party like a monster party.
And our disco dancing friend, Jimmy T.
Oh, yeah.
We will see you next time.